because I have been touched by this issue. It's very personal to me. It may have caused me to mangle some of my statements and comments. It's caused this uproar.
Don Young apologizes at AFN. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an advertising banner near AFN draws criticism.
People are really disgusted. I've heard that people are hurt. I've heard that people think it's 100% inappropriate.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Alaska Native elders are 5 times more likely to be injured in a fall, but there are simple ways for elders to reduce fall-related injuries. Get an eye exam every year. Stay informed about medications that can cause dizziness. Exercise regularly to increase strength and balance, and keep your home clutter-free. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
Alaska Congressman Don Young angered many of his constituents this week with remarks about suicide at Wasilla High that he later acknowledged were insensitive. Today, he used his annual speech at the Alaska Federation of Natives to apologize. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Young made the apology the focus of his speech.
Because I did say what I said. I am profoundly and genuinely sorry for the pain it may have caused people. Genuinely sorry for the pain of the individual as I have experienced it.
On Tuesday, at a high school assembly, Young seemed to blame suicide on the lack of support of family and friends. The principal said it offended her and some of the students, especially because Young had just been informed that a student at the school recently took his own life. At the AFN convention, Young said he knows the tragedy of suicide.
Because I have been touched by this issue, it's very personal to me. It may have caused me to mangle some of my statements and comments. It's caused this uproar. But I will tell you how many times I've asked myself, did I do enough?
He says his record shows he understands that suicide stems from mental illness and said he voted for federal funds to train teachers and others to combat it. He also reiterated the importance of support. He said Kotzebue has not had a youth suicide in 5 years, which he attributed to good support.
And that's what we have to do around the state, a support group.
Young then reminded his audience what he's done for Alaska Natives over the years, with land claims, business advantages for Native corporations, subsistence bills, and fishing quotas. He told them he's working to advance a co-management plan to give Native communities the right to co-manage fish and wildlife on their own lands.
Now, I look out in this room, and I will suggest respectfully, I have been your congressman. And I want to continue to be that congressman.
His speech was repeatedly punctuated with applause, and Young received a standing ovation. His Democratic opponent, Forrest Dunbar, listened from the back of the room. Dunbar noted that Young sounded less than sorry on Wednesday when asked about his Wasilla remarks. But Dunbar said he thought Young's AFN apology was genuine.
I think that given the huge importance of this speech, I doubt he will rescind or further clarify any of it in a private setting. Hopefully he won't, because I do believe that he was being sincere.
Young was warmly embraced when he stepped down from the stage. But not everyone in the room was impressed with him. Gloria Poulard, originally from Emonic, says she had a relative commit suicide this summer. Poulard thinks there's nothing Young could say that would erase his hurtful statements from Monday.
He's a leader for Alaskans. Why'd he even mention stuff like this?
Joe Nelson, a Juneau resident from Yakutat, says he would have liked to see the congressman focus his speech more on subsistence.
I guess that he's trying to make up for a little misstep or that happened up in Wasilla in a school there, but I don't know. I'm not sure that he's connecting with the younger generations, and that's where we really need to be connecting.
Senator Lisa Murkowski, who has endorsed Young, was among those who had called for Young to apologize. An online petition calling for her to withdraw her endorsement has attracted more than 300 signatures. In Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Candidates for U.S. Senate Dan Sullivan and Mark Begich met on stage at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage today. Both candidates agreed that Alaska's subsistence management system is broken. Each candidate's solution, however, was different. Begich supports more federal involvement.
I get requests now from many different parts of the community of Alaska asking for more federal control in the sense of managing the subsistence rights because they believe the state is not listening. An example of that was when the commercial fishing was open, subsistence was closed, and then when they reopened, commercial got the opening first and subsistence did not. I wrote a strong letter to the governor about this, that subsistence rights are a fundamental right.
Sullivan told the audience he understands the importance of subsistence. He talked about his wife, Julie Fate Sullivan, the daughter of Mary Jane Fate, a once prominent figure in the Alaska Federation of Natives. He talked about spending summers at the family fish camp. He thinks more state involvement is key to fixing subsistence, not less. At the end of his answer, he defended himself to delegates for his role in representing the state of Alaska in the Katie John case, a case that AFN was involved in for 19 years. AFN saw the state's appeals of the case as an attack on subsistence rights.
When I was Attorney General, I did participate in an element of the Katie John case. This had been a case going on for decades. There was no personal lawsuit against Katie John. I have the deepest respect for her like I do my mother-in-law. That case was about, when I was involved, the extent of state control over our rivers. And as Alaska's Attorney General, I advocated for more state control, not control from the federal government. And that's the way most
state officials
have done that.
After the forum, volunteers with signs reading "Follow Me to Vote" appeared. The volunteers led people across the street to City Hall, where ballots for all precincts were available for early voting. Fostering healthy communities has been a regular theme of the AFN convention. Health associations set up booths with literature on substance abuse, and all official AFN events are sober. If anyone shows up under the influence, that person is escorted out. So a banner advertising drink specials alongside the AFN logo attracted attention on Thursday when it was hung up at McGinley's Pub in sight of the convention entrance. Liz Medicine Crow heads up the First Alaskans Institute and is attending the convention. She takes issue with the sign beyond the unauthorized use of the AFN logo. The banner read, "A jack in the hand is worth two in the bush," to advertise whiskey and the Bush brand of beer, while punning on the term Bush Alaska. Medicine Crow says the advertising is in conflict with the spirit of the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention.
People are really disgusted. I've heard that people are hurt. I've heard that people think it's 100% inappropriate. I also hear people are like not surprised because the welcome from the this place of Anchorage is just not as warm as it could be, considering, you know, how much money comes into this town and how many people are utilizing the services here.
The banner took on added significance because of McGinley's affiliation with Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan. Sullivan includes his status as a founding partner of the bar in his official biography. Sullivan delivered welcome remarks to AFN yesterday morning and is running as the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor. He did not return a message left on his cell phone asking about the banner, but employees of McGinley's Pub explained that the sign was actually the work of their beverage suppliers. Bar manager Denise Bosted said the sign was produced and installed by K&L Distributors. She added the sign was never meant to insult anybody. When approached by a reporter with questions about the sign on Thursday evening, they took it down. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the mass die-off of sea stars hits Alaska waters.
I just stopped. There were these big, huge white spots all over them, and they were just wasting away. My heart just sank.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
An unmanned fuel barge adrift in the Beaufort Sea hasn't run aground yet. A Coast Guard aircraft from Air Station Kodiak got a visual on the small Canadian barge today. Commander Sean Decker says it's still floating west, about 20 miles north of Prudhoe Bay.
Right now, all of our computer drift models, and after we actually saw it today, we are confident that it's going to continue drifting past Prudhoe Bay, and it's going to remain in open water for at least the next 12 to 24 hours.
The barge broke loose from its tugboat in a storm at sea on Monday. That tug has since returned to an iced-in port in Canada's Northwest Territory. And right now, there aren't any other vessels nearby to help get the barge under control. Decker says the Coast Guard is waiting to see whether it goes aground or gets stuck in winter sea ice before planning further response. He says the vessel may not spill its diesel fuel cargo, about 950 gallons of it, even if it does hit the coast, because the shoreline is fairly flat and mostly gravel. He says they're working with the Canadian Coast Guard and the vessel's owner, a large Canadian barge company, to keep an eye on the barge through the weekend. State officials have approved a plan proposed by Flint Hills Resources Alaska to continue an ongoing cleanup of sulfalane and other contaminants that have leaked from its North Pole refinery since the 1970s. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, the agreement may help improve the chances of Flint Hills eventually selling the refinery, which it closed in May.
Officials with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation and the Department of Law announced Monday that they'd approved Flint Hills' cleanup plan for the refinery property only. The plan does not include any cleanup outside of the refinery property line. Kristen Ryan is head of DEC's Spill Prevention and Response Division, and she says the agreement essentially states that Flint Hills should continue to do what it's been doing for about 3 years now.
It's basically our agreement that the activities that they are doing on site are the right things to do.
Flint Hills has been testing methods to clean up sulfalane since soon after the company announced in 2009 that it had discovered the chemical in groundwater outside the refinery property. Sulfalane is an industrial solvent used in oil refining. It leaked from the facility in North Pole for years before Flint Hills bought it in 2004. The company also began providing drinking water to North Pole area residents, and it took the refinery's previous owner and the state to court to make the case that they share liability for the contamination. Ryan says in addition to sulfalane, Flint Hills will continue cleaning up other on-site contaminants, such as benzene, that have leaked from the refinery since at least the late 1970s.
It's not just sulfalane. In fact, a lot of the on-site recovery systems are in place to capture the benzene and the other gasoline-related spills that have happened over the years, which is unfortunately pretty common for a refinery back in the days when they perhaps weren't as careful.
Flint Hills spokesman Jeff Cook says the state's adoption of the plan is an important step toward continuing the cleanup and, company officials hope, eventual sale of the facility.
It is a critical step in detailing what's expected of us and allowing us to reposition ourselves for sale to a third party and to continue our operation.
Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins says he's encouraged that Flint Hills and the state have agreed to the on-site cleanup plan.
It's a step.
A step toward helping Flint Hills sell the refinery and getting it back up and running and restoring some of the 90 jobs and millions of dollars in tax revenues that the borough and North Pole have lost due to the closure. Hopkins says he's looking forward to the state moving ahead on a cleanup plan for the whole area affected by the contamination. The plume of sulfalane in groundwater has now grown to about 3 miles long, 2.5 miles wide, and 300 feet deep. It's one of the largest contamination plumes in the state.
Any of the other actions for a large plume that's out in North Pole and the borough area, many residents have that plume underneath their properties, so we'll have to wait and see what some of the outcomes are that are offered for that.
The big cleanup will have to wait until after DEC Commissioner Larry Hartig issues his decision, expected by the end of the year, on whether to set a stringent sulfalane cleanup level, as recommended by DEC staff, or a lesser level, favored by Flint Hills. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks has received a $23.8 million award from the National Institutes of Health for a new Biomedical Learning and Student Training Program, or BLAST. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, the new undergraduate program is part of a national effort by NIH to enhance diversity in the biomedical workforce.
In a teleconference, NIH Director Francis Collins said diversity in biomedical research is critical.
There is an increasingly urgent need to ensure that the scientific talent, which is key to our nation's success, is nurtured, recognized, and supported across all demographic groups.
As part of an effort to increase diversity in the biomedical workforce, NIH awarded 5 years' worth of funding to 3 researchers from UAF. They'll head the new BLAST program to work with students from rural Alaska. Barbara Taylor is the director of undergraduate research and scholarly activity at UAF. She says there's a lot of interest in biomedical research outside of Alaska's urban centers.
Because there are hospitals and clinics there, and those are seen as desirable jobs, and the local students would like to know how to train for and compete for those jobs.
Yeah, and on top of that, you know, a lot of those communities still live pretty close to a subsistence lifestyle.
That's Arlie Reynolds. He's the associate dean of UAF's Department of Veterinary Medicine. Along with Taylor, he's also a principal investigator for BLAST.
And this program is designated a One Health program, which means that we're trying to integrate animal health, human health, and environmental health into one package. And, you know, with things changing as they are in Alaska, both from a climate point of view and economic point of view, it'd be great to have people from those communities trained in biomedical sciences so they can also be advisors back to the communities they came from on pretty important issues as they change.
There are roughly 20 labs on UAF's campus that do some sort of biomedical research. Already, Barbara Taylor says there are a number of Alaska Native and minority students working in those labs. She says the NIH funding will enhance their research. It'll also pay for infrastructure, scholarships, hands-on workshops, and travel opportunities for students and faculty.
We need a tiered mentoring network, so we have to involve graduate students and technicians and postdocs and faculty members. We have to make it possible for them to be working on projects that are amenable to undergraduate participation.
The new program at UAF is similar to 10 others funded by NIH nationwide. UAF will partner with Illisegvik College in Barrow, the University of Alaska Southeast, and 9 of UAF's rural campuses. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Josh Edge. This week on AK, Sea Star Mystery. A trip to the coast usually means you're going to see sea stars, but a mysterious disease is killing them along the west coast. There had been a few reports of 6 sea stars in Alaska, but recently in Sitka, the first mass die-offs in the state were detected. Scientists in Sitka are tracking the progress of the disease, and Bryce has the story.
Patty Dick lives on a boat in Thompson Harbor in Sitka. In the morning, when it's low tide and she has a spare moment, she goes out and checks on the sea stars living in the area.
I just sat there just in awe of the beauty of that animal. Everybody loves sea stars.
Dick teaches 6th grade biology at Blatchley Middle School. She often takes her students on field trips to learn about marine animals, and they usually find dozens of sea stars. But one morning last month, Dick noticed something was wrong with the sea stars.
I just looked over and I just stopped. There were these big, huge white spots all over them, and they were just wasting away. My heart just sank.
She'd heard about this happening, but she hadn't seen it with her own eyes.
I'm trying to find one starfish that is not affected, and they were all dead. They were all dead.
They had sea star wasting disease. All along the West Coast, sea stars have been dying of this disease. The first case was discovered in the summer of 2013 on the Olympic Peninsula, and scientists still don't know what's causing it.
That's pretty much the craziest thing about this disease, is we don't know the cause.
Taylor White is the aquarium manager at the Sitka Sound Science Center. For the past year, she's been working with a team that's monitoring sea stars and other marine life in Sitka and along the West Coast. She takes me for a walk along the beach to see for myself.
There's this one looks fine. This is a healthy one. It's kind of the largest of these three here.
We're looking at some sea stars on Sage Beach next to the Science Center.
It seems like it's a Leptosterius. Only has three arms and, yeah, very, very much lesioned body.
The Sitka Sound Science Center is part of a project called MARINE, which stands for Multi-Agency Rocky Intertidal Network. MARINE is made up of agencies that use the same monitoring methods. They've set up about 120 sites along the coast in the U.S., from Southern California to Alaska. There are three sites in Sitka. Once sea star wasting disease hits an area, it can quickly spread through the population.
So at some sites, nearly all of the sea stars go.
Research divers from the University of Alaska Sitka have surveyed different areas in Sitka Sound and have seen evidence of wasting in most locations. At Sage Beach, divers found that in the past few weeks, sunflower stars have disappeared, leaving behind these white ghost piles of tissue. And while there have been minor wasting events in the past, this event is by far the longest and most widespread. White says she's seeing the same thing happen in the touch tanks at the Sitka Sound Science Center. They use an open system, so sea stars live in water straight from the ocean. She describes what she saw when the disease hit.
They just started crawling away from their bodies. They contort themselves, then they just started to decay because there's so much bacteria in the water anyway. They just kind of break down after that point.
When sea stars are sick, they can lose a leg and then regrow a healthy one. But with the wasting disease, they just keep losing legs, sometimes only until a central disc is left. The aquarium has had 35 sea stars die within just 3 weeks. And scientists know there will be substantial impacts from these mass deaths, but they aren't sure what yet. Marnie Chapman, a biology professor at the University of Alaska Sitka, has been working with White in the long-term monitoring project. She says sea stars play a big role in the ecosystem.
They're major predators in the intertidal. They're definitely the lions and the tigers of the intertidal environment.
And they're diverse. There are about 1,900 species of sea stars in the world, and at least 18 in Sitka alone.
You know, sea stars are as unique and as individual as those predators that we're more familiar with.
There are several groups trying to figure out what's causing this mass die-off. It could be a bacterium, a virus, or some environmental change, like lower pH levels in the ocean or warmer water. Most scientists think it's a combination of things. And when scientists do figure it out, there's not much that can be done. If it's a pathogen, there won't be a sea star vaccine. And if it's warmer water, that's irreversible. Chapman worries about the future of the species. She recalls a day when she was out counting dying sea stars, and a boy was looking at healthy ones nearby.
This young kiddo was saying, "Mom, look at all the sea stars." And there were a lot of really healthy, unaffected ones on the side that they were looking on. And I thought, boy, I hope that still happens. I hope that still happens next summer.
But there is some hope. At some of the marine sites along the coast, they're seeing some juvenile sea stars. So they could make a comeback. For now, however, Chapman encourages everyone to go out and appreciate Alaska's sea stars. For AK, I'm Ann Bryce.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Heidelberg on Prince of Wales Island in Southeast.
I'm Natasha Peel, City Administrator, Heidelberg. I think Heidelberg's very cultural, and they just recently, last year, started a dance group again, and they went to Celebration. And the sad thing, though, is a lot of our elders are passing away, and I know it's a great concern with our language. The school has been pushing to have Haida language and Haida art in the school so that's not lost, so we can learn more. We just got through putting in a new harbor, and then we've got a new sewer project, and that phase one was just completed, so that's kind of a big deal for our community. We're actually going to have a community meeting in November to talk about the upgrades to our water plant and to our sewer lines and what the next steps are. You know, it's just now starting this last few years, starting to get tourists, and it's been increasing each year. And it's one of our community's focuses to increase that and how to get more people through, because we get a lot of visitors on Prince Wales Island, and so we've been discussing how to attract them down here. So we're actually investing in services and things. Our tribe is working on selling fuel. The city put in a new harbor, and then we're looking at putting in a washage area. And then we've just passed to open a liquor store, so we're going to be doing that soon. And then we're working on opening up a coffee shop. And so just different things, because, you know, several years ago there was none of that. And our mayor has discussed about setting up a little RV park just for the RVs that are coming to the island. If they know there's services available in Heidelberg, maybe more would come through if we have those services. It's definitely a growing community. Things are changing and happening for the better, I believe.
Natasha Peel is city administrator of Heidelberg. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ann Bryce, Ashley Snyder, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Josh Edge.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jennifer Canfield in Anchorage, Annie Ropeek in Unalaska, and Tim Ellis and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez and Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.